So October 21st, Sunday morning, and this is our first session this morning going over the third quiz on the first Mishnah of the fifth Perek. So let's talk vocabulary.
Avdei.
Did.
Did. Right. Past tense of the verb that if it was Hebrew it would be asah. Except that it's in the plural. The words in the plural, which brings us actually to skip to the first question of the second part of the quiz. What final letter often falls out in the Aramaic of the Talmud Bavli? Brings us to Paul.
I didn't have any notes. I was trying to remember. Was it the Nun?
That's it.
Okay.
That's it. All right, so the word that we're looking at in the vocabulary is Avdin, which is the equivalent of the Hebrew Osim. We make the plural in Aramaic with the Yud Nun at the end, and here the Nun falls out, as it often happens in the Aramaic of the Bavli. Okay, so then we get to the next word, Matnitin. David.
I think it means from our Mishnah.
Yep, that's what it means. It's the root that refers to Tannaitic material. The root is Taf Nun Yud. And that's anything that's learned by Tanaim, by rabbis of the Tannaic period, is from that root Taf Nun Yud as a verb, as a noun. Matniti means our Tanya. In other words, the or authoritative Tanya, which is the Mishnah, our Mishnah. Matniti is our Mishnah, indeed. And it brings us to David Atzvut. Right, the other David.
Sadness.
Sadness, right. And then Tzchok.
Tzchok is joking.
Joking, right.
In the middle of joking,
yeah.
Telling jokes.
And then Sticha.
Conversation.
And very often the in the material of the Tanaim, as opposed to later usages, Sikha is often with the connotation of Sikha Bitela, of just a frivolous conversation, whereas it has almost the opposite meaning in Yeshivish Hebrew of the last 200 years. The Sikha in Yeshivish Hebrew usually means a presentation of the Rosh Hashiva on a subject of moral weight.
Oh, that's the shmuz?
Right, the shmuz, a sikha.
Just a regular conversation.
Well, that's in modern Hebrew. In Yeshivish Hebrew, it's a shmuz, it's a presentation, whereas again, in the Mishnah, it's very often a sikha betila, a frivolous conversation. Yeah. So that brings us to Kalut Rosh.
Lightheadedness. Yes.
Right. And then we get to Dvarim Betilim.
Words that are wasting
yeah.
time, I think.
Yeah, right.
Silly words.
Silly words, right. Right. Pretty much the same connotation as the word siha. Ditanya. David.
Ditanya we learn, that is learned as follows.
Right, in a Braita. Not in the Mishnah, and not in any earlier source, not in any later source, but specifically a Braita. When they say not an earlier source, not a Pasuk. Say not a later source, not an Amoritic source, but rather a Tanaitic source from the time of the Tanaim, from the time of the Mishnah. And the next word, the beginning of the third column, a review words, not from last week, from the week before, Shohim.
It's delay.
Oh, I skipped Mr. Gala. Oh, no,
yeah,
what did I do?
It's all right, it's okay.
So you said delay, to wait.
I knew it.
Wait, and then Mora.
Mora means a teacher.
I thought we were going to get you on that, but look at the last letter. It's not a hey, it's an aleph at the end.
Mora.
We tricked you.
What is morah? I don't know.
Morah is from the word yirah.
Yeah. Oh,
fear.
Fear.
Right. Right. Morah is fear. Fear. No. Right. Right. And then we go back to Paul Hachna'a.
Yiddish we say. This is a shrekin amoyra.
I don't remember.
Hachna'a. So we go to David.
No, sorry.
This word. Passive. This word.
Vanquish.
How did you put it? You're right, just with your first...
Submission or vanquish.
Submission, right. Hachna is submission. Hachna, it's giving into a Kodesh Baruch Hu. It's, of course, it could be other connotations also. In war, you can be machnia, an enemy. But you can have hachna'a of an enemy. But there, we're talking about hachna'a of your pride. Hachna is submission to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And the last word, I guess we'll go back to Paul, is hachi, like from the phrase hachinami.
Right. Except I don't remember.
Thus. Right, thus.
And just remind
Hachanami, thus also.
Means, oh, thus also. Okay.
So now we get to the second part of the quiz, which is Musagei Yisod, basic concepts. The first question we already did. And the second question is, describe the nature of the Hilchot Alfasi. So we're still waiting for Paul. You passed twice, I think. Okay, passes three times. The Hilchot Alfasi, we saw last time. And I don't mean what it says in it. I mean, what type of book is it? Who wrote it? When it was written? What style? Paul, you coming back or you're still passing?
Still watching.
Okay.
Oh, it's the book from the rabbi from Fez.
Right. Al-Fasi is the Fezi.
So it's a commentary. There's a commentary on the Mishnah.
On the whole Talmud.
On the whole Talmud.
And what type of commentary? I give you a hint. Remember, I said he never speaks in his own words.
He just compiled the sort of the halachic points of the
right.
Took out the Agadah,
right.
The arguments.
Exactly, right. Taking out the Agadah, taking out the arguments, just giving us the final conclusion in the words of the original Talmudic text, not in his own words very usually.
Like the Mishnah, no? Look up his niece and
the Hilchot Alfasi is like the Mishnah in the sense that it tries to be concise and doesn't try to give us any extraneous material.
So how, for the Rambam, the Mishneh Torah, did this, he organized the laws differently, but is that kind of like a core that he theoretically worked from?
Absolutely so. The Rambam sees the Rif as one of his main inspirations.
Mm.
And I simply don't remember, but I think there is an unbroken chain from the Rif to the Rimigash, to the Rambam's father's teacher, to the Rambam's father, to the Rambam. Mm. That's four or five generations. I don't mean to say a biological link, I mean to say teacher to student. Yeah. Okay. So that's the Hilchot Alfasi. Now we get to our material, this Sugyatenu, our Sugya, our material. In what sense is Halacha Psuka more conducive to Hachna than Din or Devar Halacha? And this question is simply to remember what David said last week, David Radunsky. So, David, do you remember what you said?
I mean, not controversial. Just cut and dry. That's interesting.
Yeah, but you...
It's distracting.
That's what I said, but you gave a deeper answer.
Yeah, what was it? I guess I don't remember. I'm just paying attention to you.
So I like what David said. David had said, anyone remember?
No.
So he said that, so remember, Devar Halacha and Din, both of them in the context of the bright we're looking at, seem to be discussion, seem to be human weighing of different opinions, human spara, human thinking, right? Human initiative, if you will. Whereas Halacha Psuka is just the Halacha accepting what the book says, accepting what the teacher says. Din and Devar Halacha are weighing, thinking, deciding. Halacha Psuka is just accepting what the teacher said. So I think that David had said, if I'm correct, that the mindset, the psychological mindset of Devar Halacha and Din is human assertion, human power, human ascendancy, that we have the authority to decide a Kodesh Baruch Hu's Torah and to weigh different opinions. Whereas Devar Halacha is just accepting what previous generations said, just accepting the Halacha as it is. So in that sense, Halach Suka in the mindset is much more conducive to Hachna'at, to giving in, to submission to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, to accepting, whereas Devar Halacha or Din leaves you feeling a sense of human empowerment, which is not at all what Hachna is about, not at all about what Tefillah is about. That's what I had in mind with that question. In the second question, I had in mind what David said. The simple answer, which is what additional reason might be proper to precede tefillah with halacha psuka rather than din or devar halacha. And there, it's simply the matter of the distraction. If you're in din, you're din in devar l'chai, you're thinking, you're weighing, you're preoccupied with the material because it's interesting and exciting, and it keeps you thinking, and you go into that, you go into tefillah from that, you can't concentrate because your mind is preoccupied. If you go into tefillah after learning halacha psuka, that's it. It's just the halacha to remember. There's nothing that preoccupies you. I guess for the third question, we'll try Paul. Where our Talmud text reads Simcha Shel Mitzvah, what did the text that Rashi had say? Yeah, we can go there.
Yeah.
To page Lamed Aleph, Amud Aleph, in the Talmudic page.
Yeah. Simcha, yeah.
And it was a matter of looking at the Devar, at the Dibur Matril, that Rashi quotes from the text.
Yeah. You want me to say that? What Simcha Mitzvah?
We're going to give Paul 10. No, Paul says, pass to Mr. Galler.
Yeah. Simcha Shel Mitzvah means that he says something about good thing that God did for us, that the Rebbeinu Shalom did for the Jewish people. In other words, Yitzias Mitzrayim, or any other nisim that God
did. Yeah, that's what Rashi says.
The Jewish people.
But what does Rashi quote from the Gemara that's different from what the Gemara itself says? Even Dibur Matril, Rashi is simply quoting from the Gemara.
Yeah, it says... It says,
that's Rashi. I'm saying Rashi's quote from the Gemara. Before Rashi says what he holds.
Yeah.
And Rashi just says in the bold face, right, Ela mitok simcha.
Mitok simcha, yeah.
And he's drops the word Shel Mitzvah.
Yeah.
And it's hard to believe that if Rashi had those words in his text, he would have dropped them in the Dibur Matril, because Dibur Matril is a full phrase. And here it's just in the middle of a phrase, it stops.
Happy happenings. You mentioned all the good, happy happenings that happen to us.
Mm-hmm.
That means
Rashi says.
Tanhumim.
Mm-hmm.
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 So the question is why he drops those two words?
Because he probably didn't have them in his text. He's just copying his text as he has it.
Oh.
And it's very likely...
He didn't shorten the quote at all when he shortened.
Usually if he shortens a quote, he would stop at a comma, at an interruption. But it's the middle of a phrase. So therefore, there's good reason to believe, and of course we saw other reasons to believe this from other texts, as we'll see in another 2 minutes, that something's going on here. So there's variant texts with this phrase, Ela mitok simcha shel mitzvah.
He can finish the simcha shel mitzvah before he says the tefillah, right?
That's what it seems, that this is the way you begin tefillah, before you're in tefillah.
You begin the tefillah after the simcha shel mitzvah is completed.
Mm-hmm. That's what I would think. So anyway, so we know that the problem here in the text, Rashi probably doesn't have the words Shel Mitzvah, just has Mitok Simcha. Then let's go on to the next question. What is the important point made by the Rif?
Oh, the Rif.
So that brings us back to the Rif, to Rabbi Yitzhak Alfasi, which is, at least in my order of pages, the first page. I don't know if you have the same order. The Rif was in the upper left-hand corner, the Ilchot Alfasi. So who wants to try and remember which one is it?
Oh, I got it here, yeah.
Yeah, so I have it over here. This is the Ilchot Alfasi. So who remembers what the very important point is that the Rif inadvertently makes? Because he probably doesn't know.
I can remember part of it.
Okay.
But not the whole story. It's the Tana instead of Tana Rabbana.
Right.
And my recollection is that implies that he just had one brisa, or he's saying the brisa is the same, instead of a controversy between two brises.
So that's not correct. The first part you said was correct. The second part isn't correct.
Okay.
Let's go back to the material to remember exactly what was going on. So we'll come back to the Rif, but now we're going to look at the Gemara itself, which is the page that is Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph in the Steinsaltz. Right, the Lamed Aleph Amud Aleph, not this one, and not this one, and this one. Lamed Aleph and Mud Aleph. So the Gemara said, Tana Rabbanan, I'm in my bracket, where Rav Steintos has an Aleph there to help us identify. Tana Rabbanan, Ein Omdin Mitpalel, Lo Mitoch Din, Lo Mitoch Devar Halacha, Elo Mitoch Halacha Sukkah. And then we'll skip to my next bracket. Rabbanan Avdi Kematnitin. The Rabbanan, in other words, the majority of the rabbis did like our Matnitin, our Mishnah, which is you don't daven except out of Kovid Rosh. Ravashi Aved Kibraita. Whereas Rav Ashi did like the Braita. And the Braita said, you daven out of Halachat Sukkah. It didn't say Kovid Rosh. Everyone's with me?
In the middle of Halachat Sukkah, yeah.
Yeah, and then the text goes on to say, Tana Ravanan, Einom Din Litpalel, Ela Mitoch Atzvut, Velo Mitoch Atzlut. Not out of sadness, not out of lethargy, Velo Mitoch Schok, not out of joking, Velo Mitoch Sicha, not out of frivolous speech, Velo Mitoch Kalut Rosh, not out of lightheadedness, Velo Mitoch Dvarim Betilim, and not empty words, Ela Mitoch Simcha Shel Mitzvah. Rather, Daven out of Simcha Shel Mitzvah. So we have here three opinions. The Mishnah says, Davin from Kovid Rosh. The first Braita says, Davin from Halachat Sukkah. And the third Braita says, Davin from Simcha Shel Mitzvah. Right? Three different options.
In the middle, yeah.
And then, the question is, what's the relationship between these three? Are they all three different things? Are two similar? Are they all similar? So, going back to the statement that said Rabbanan Avdi Kemish Matnitin, the Rabbanan did like the Mishnah, they davened out of Kovid Rosh. Rav Ashi Aved Kibraita, Rav Ashi did like the Braita. And which Braita does mean? The Braita that they just referred to, the Braita of Halachat Sukkah. Stop me from saying anything unclear. So then we ask ourselves, wait a second, is there really a machloket between Kovid Rosh and Halachat Sukkah, such that we'd say the Rabbanan did like X, Rav Ashi did like Y? What's the big difference between davening out of Kovid Rosh and davening out of Halachat Sukkah? They're both based on the same thing. So perhaps there's a little difference that Kovid Rosh is real seriousness, real thinking about the tefillah, really settling down and concentrating, whereas Halachat Sukkah is just a matter of not being distracted.
What David said.
Or what David said. It's just it's a matter of hachna'ah to accepting God's authority.
Completely.
So it's pretty similar to Kovid Rosh. Again, the difference might be that Kovid Rosh is more Kovid Rosh, is more serious than just coming out of Halachat Sukkah. Halachat Sukkah might just mean that you're not super involved in something else. Kovid Rosh is really a great seriousness, but they seem to be the same basic areas. So again, we ask ourselves, why does the Gemara say that there's an argument such that the Rabbanan did like our Mishnah, Rav Ashi did like the Braita? The Rif answers that question simply by saying that it doesn't mean, I'm still in the Gemara to show you what the Rif does, it's not that Rav Ashi did like the Braita above. When it says Rav Ashi did like the Braita, it means the Braita below, the Braita of Simcha. So if I say that the Rabbanan did like our Mishnah of Kovid Rosh, Rav Ashi did like the Braita of Simcha, that's a machloket. That's a big, 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 big difference. That's a serious thing. That's a real tension. And the Rif said that Rav Ashi is referring to the following Braita, not the one before. And the Rif probably was just, might be just following his text. They might have had a different text. The Rif doesn't seem to be consciously interpreting something. He might just be echoing a different text. Let's read the Alfasi, read the Rif, to see where this came from. David, can we? Should I read or should I wait a minute?
No, it's okay.
I really want to make sure that everyone is in the same on the same page. Yes. So the Rif says, Rabbanan Avdi Kematnitin. That's a word for word our Gemara. V'Rav Shimi Bar Ashi says a slightly different name. We just have Rav Ashi as Rav Shimi Bar Ashi. Aved, that word Aved is the same word as in our text. Kabraita, that's exactly like our text. But the next word is different. He has Ditanya, whereas our text had Tana Rabbanan. He has, and the whole difference is in one letter, the D. Rav Shimi Bar Ashi did like the Braita D, which means as we learned, Ditanya, as we learned, and that's the introduction to the next Braita. So as whereas in the Gemara, it was Kibbe Braita, period, and then it said Tana Rabbanan introducing a new Braita, the Reef has a conjunction between them. Did like the Braita as we learned, did. And he goes on to bring the Braita that talks about Simcha. That's the whole story. Makes a whole difference.
Refers to the Braita below.
Yeah. Did Rav Ashi Rashi did like the Braita did as we learned.
Yeah.
As we learned, then it brings the following Braita. Okay. So everyone seems to be thinking, so let you think.
I personally just want to make a note.
Rav Steinsaltz appears to disagree with that. He puts it up here. Organizationally, and he says that it has to do with
From the very way Rav Steinsaltz organized the text, he made a big break here, right? I'll just show everyone to remind you. Right, he made a new paragraph.
And he also, in his commentary, he leaves no ambiguity about what he's referring
to. In his commentary, he follows Rashi, who understands that there's no connection between Rav Ashi and what comes following. It's rather, Rav Ashi is referring to what came earlier.
This is part of the Braita this year, right? This is
the Braita begins here and goes all the way to the end. It gets even further, actually.
Thing like Rav Ashi, like
Rav Shimi Brashi.
Shimi Brashi, right?
It's the same Braita, exact same Braita.
Are they two different rabbis, Rav Ashi, and here it says Rav Ashi over the Braita? And over here it says Shimi Brashi.
There are two different rabbis.
They're two different rabbis.
The Reef had
it's a
different...
a son and a father.
Apparently, but the Reef had a different text. Simply had a different text. Different text reminds us of the book you gave me to read.
Oh,
I finished it. I should have brought it back. Thank you.
What text?
I'm saying.
Refer to.
I just mean that we talk here that the Reef had a different text of the Gemara. That's the whole basis of the livelihood of Rav David Weiss Halevni, finding variant texts.
So what is the real difference between Rabashi and Shimi Barashi?
They're just different people.
Rabashi says... He did like the Braise, right?
Psuka,
they talk about Aloha Psuka. And Shimi Barashi talks about Simcha Shel Mitzvah.
Yeah.
That's the difference in them.
But it's not that there, it's the Reef simply had a different text. We don't know who it was. Was it Rav Ashi or Rav Shimi Barashi? We just don't know who it was. There are two different memories of who
two different
the
rabbis,
teacher was.
Shimi Barashi and Rav Ashi.
Is it fair to say that that, in a sense, that difference is inconsequential?
I think it's inconsequential.
On the other hand, it could be used as evidence that the text was different in other ways also.
Right.
Because of that small difference.
Of the different name, you mean?
The difference in the name.
Mm-hmm.
So that shows at least it was different that way, and so that one could... It's a make-weight argument that also maybe there's something else different.
Yeah.
It leads us to have confidence in the thesis that they had different texts in other ways. That's all I'm trying to say.
There's truth in what you're saying, but I'll give a little bit of background to it, which makes it a little bit, which makes what you're saying a little bit less consequential. On every page of Gemara, there are 50 different variants. On every page of Gemara, there are two ways, basically, to find variants. You could either go to a library that's a depository of manuscripts, whether the original manuscripts or whether microfilms of manuscripts, and just compare them. You see, every page, you have a letter different here, a name different here, an arrangement different here. Sometimes it's consequential things, sometimes it's inconsequential. On the other hand, you can look in a book that has collected all these different variants. There's a book called Dictuque Sofrim. Dictuque Sofrim. That's the tallest book you've ever seen. I'd say it's this tall. Uh-huh. And it has the... And all it is a list of variants. It's very hard to use with all different types of abbreviations, but you see that almost in every line there are variations that are found in different manuscripts, that are found by how Rashi quotes the Gemara, how other Rishonim quote the Gemara. And
a son can be different from a father. I mean, can be a different opinion.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
Wasn't that the major effort of the Vilna Gaon to sort of clean up the variants? And
no, almost the opposite.
Really?
The Vilna Gaon was a chacham who was so confident in his spara, in his understanding, he actually created variants. In the following sense, the Vilna Gaon was willing to say that on the basis of my understanding of the text must be corrupt, and I will tell you what it really should say. And he did that in most cases without manuscripts in front of him. He changed the text without manuscripts in front of him.
Interesting.
And there are, of course, some cases which we found that he was right. We actually found manuscripts, and he was right. But some cases we haven't found manuscripts. Right? And that the Vilna Gaon... Say it again?
Did you ever find where he was wrong?
Well, you can't say he was wrong, because perhaps tomorrow we'll find a manuscript. Right? But the Vilna Gaon is a classic example of the power of Svara. He was willing to change text on the basis of Svara. Which, of course, that's something that modern critical scholars are not so happy about. Yeah, if sometimes we ask, how did variants develop? So, we've said in the past, perhaps originally the text was never solidified. Perhaps there were always variants from the very beginning. Perhaps they developed on the basis of copyist errors. But here's a case of Vilna Gaon, and could have created errors on purpose. In other words, he used his svara and said the text must be wrong. So now we have, in the place we had one text, now we have two. Mm. And later generation will ask, which is the real text?
But were subsequent texts published with his...
Not yet.
Okay. Well, not the way he said it should be, but here's what he suggests.
Yes, I mean, his commentary... within his commentary, not inside the page, this is what the Vilna Gaon says. Mm-hmm. But there are others that we do have such things, not the Vilna Gaon, but say the Bach. Mm-hmm. We have the side of a page of Gemara as a whole list of the Bach's variants. Mm-hmm. And sometimes those variants come from Svara. Mm-hmm. But the Vilna Gaon wasn't the only person to do this. He's one of the more well-known. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so now, the last thing on the quiz was simply the Yerushalmi. And we saw that the Yerushalmi quotes the same bright that it's quoted in our Bavli, the bright of Simcha Shel Mitzvah. So we'll look for the Yerushalmi, it's not that one, but rather this one. The page that I have, the Talmud Yerushalmi, together with other things.
Do I have that page?
You certainly do. I'll help you find it. Here it is.
Okay.
The Talmud Yerushalmi, beginning from there.
This is Yerushalmi.
Not beginning from there, beginning from there, Tani.
So, Tani.
So the Talmud Yerushalmi, of course, has the same Mishnayot as the Talmud Bavli, but different commentary. And in some cases, the Yerushalmi quotes the same Braitot that the Bavli quotes in different order, different places, and sometimes in a different Girsa. Mm-hmm. It's this one, this page. It could be, is that it, right in front of you?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. So you see my bracket there, but 10 lines from the beginning of the Perek.
Yeah.
And it says, Tani, lo yamod adam vitpalel mitok sikha, velo mitok schok, velo mitok kalut rosh, velo mitok dvarim betelim. Right? Sound familiar?
Yeah.
Ela, Mitoch Tavar Shel Torah. Something's missing.
Yeah.
What word is missing? What word we expect? Simcha.
Simcha.
So the Yerushalmi doesn't have this matter of Simcha in that mitzvah, of right.
Yeah,
Simcha Shel Mitzvah is missing.
Yeah. Tavar Shel Torah, yeah.
And nothing really makes sense, because that matter of davening out of Simcha was in tension with the other sources we saw, right? The Mishnah says Kovid Rosh. And another writer says, out of Halacha Psuka. And suddenly this Simcha comes out of right field. Yerushalmi doesn't know such a thing. Does that mean that the version of Bavli is wrong? It doesn't mean it's wrong, not necessarily.
So how does that change it?
What do you mean by that?
I mean that word is not missing.
It would mean that were we... You know, it means now we have a question, what was the original version of this Braita? Did it have the word Simcha in it or did it not?
So it hasn't changed the overall.
Does it change the overall? It doesn't change the Psak Halacha. I mean, what we discovered in this class is not going to change the Psak Halacha. But it's going to, again, it's going to, if we had a doubt, where does this matter of Simcha come in? How does it fit? And it's so at odds with the Mishnah. So now we understand that we're not the only ones that felt like that. The Yerushalmi felt the same way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. To recite something from the Torah, you mean, the Varshal Torah. To recite something good from the Torah.
The Varshal Torah sounds like the other bright, the Halacha Psuka, perhaps. It just means Halacha Psuka.
Oh, that means Halacha Psuka.
It could be. I'm guessing.
Yeah.
It could very well be.
It's a different idea.
And if so, then all of our three sources make sense. They fit. The Mishnah says Kovid Rosh. A brayta says Halacha Psuka. And the third brayta says Devar Shel Torah. Which all fits into the same
more or less
field.
The same idea.
More or less. Right. Okay. What we're going to do today is to begin the second part of the Mishnah. In order to do that, we're going to see a source in the Talmud Yerushalmi that has nothing to do with our Mishnah. But it develops a concept that could help us, that could shed light on the second part of our Mishnah.
Is that the last page?
And that's the last page.
Oh, great. I thought you were referring to this Yerushalmi,
right.
I was completely baffled how it connected with anything. So
we're going to go to the full page Yerushalmi.
I didn't know that it didn't have anything to do with anything.
Yeah, I was hoping we were going to cover this thing.
Okay, I got the full page
Yerushalmi. Yeah. In order to understand this Yerushalmi, we're going to open up the book of Shmuel Bet.
Thank you.
Shmuel Bet, Perek Chaf. Shmuel Bet, Perek Chaf, in the art school, it's page 777. That's the name of a liquor, right? Vodka, something?
777?
Whiskey.
Seven.
No.
Isn't
that
the...
777.
Seagram's,
that's it.
What's the address?
Okay, I got it.
The Lubavitch
in... 770. 770 Ocean Parkway. Okay, so we're going to read just a little
Eastern
bit here.
Parkway.
Is that in?
Eastern Parkway.
Oh, Eastern Parkway.
777.
777, Shmuel Bet, 2 Samuel chapter 20. And this is about the reign of Melech David. There happened to be a certain base man by the name of Sheva ben Bichri, a Benjaminite. He sounded the shofar and said, "We have no part in David, and we have no heritage in the son of Jesse." In other words, this is a revolt. This is a mutiny. This is a coup. "Every man back to his tents, O Israel." So all the men of Israel went up from behind David and followed Sheva ben Bichri, but the men of Yehuda, the tribe of Yehuda, as opposed to the other tribes, clung to their king from the Jordan to Yerushalayim. David arrived at his house in Yerushalayim. The king took the 10 concubines, wives, etc., etc., etc. There's a revolt. Things are going on. And let's go to verse 4. The king said to Amasa, "Muster for me the men of Yehuda within the next 3 days, and you also stand there," etc., etc., etc. A war is going on. So we're going to read now verse 14. We can't read the whole thing. There's a civil war. It's developing, and we'll read verse 13, then 14. "Once he was removed from the road, a dead body, all the men passed and followed Yoab to chase after Sheva ben Bichri. He passed through all the tribes of Israel. This is the rebel, Sheva ben Bichri, to Avel and to Beit Ma'akah, and to all the Berites. They gathered together, and they too followed him. They came and besieged him at Avel of Beit Ma'akah. In other words, the rebel is now holed up in one of the cities of Israel. They poured a ramp against the city until it stood even with the outer wall. Made a dirt ramp to go up to the top of the wall. And all the people who were with Yoav began demolishing to topple the main wall, destroy the city, destroy this Jewish city, to get to the one rebel who rebelled against Melech David. A wise woman called out from the city, "Listen, listen, please say to Yoav, who is the chief of staff of David, come close to here so that I may speak to you." So he drew close to her. She's in the city, right? And the woman said, "Are you Yoav?" He replied, "I am." She said, "Hear the words of your maidservant." And he said, "I am listening." She spoke on, saying, "Your men should have spoken at the start, saying, 'Let me inquire in Avel about surrender,' for they would have made peace. I represent the loyal, faithful people of Israel. You were seeking to annihilate a metropolis in Israel. Why would you swallow up the heritage of Hashem? You have answered and said, far be it from me that I should swallow up or destroy. The matter is not so. Rather, a man from Mount Ephraim, his name is Sheva ben Bichri, has raised up his hand against the king, against David. Turn over him alone, and I will go away from the city." The woman then said to Yoav, "Behold, his head will be thrown to you over the wall." In her wisdom, the woman then went to all the people, and they cut off the head of Sheva ben Bichri and threw it to Yoav. He sounded the shofar, and they all disbanded from the city, every man to his tent. And Yoav then returned to Shalim to the king. That's all. So just to make it clear, Yoav was willing to destroy the whole Jewish city to get to the one rebel inside of it. And the woman said, "Don't destroy the city. We will turn him over to you." And that's what happened. That's all. That's the background to the Yerushalmi that we're going to see. Okay, so we'll just put this aside. There's no need to really open it up again. The details won't be important. It's just the basic storyline that's important. And the Yerushalmi we're about to see is a central sugya, and it's a very relevant halakha, not relevant to our Mishnah. It's relevant to our Mishnah. There's a certain concept that comes up there. Here we go. Ready for the Yerushalmi, which is in Masechet Shumot, Perek Shmini, top of the page. Tani, we learned in the Braita. Siot b'nei Adam, groups of people, Shayu mahalchin b'dera, that they were walking on the way. Perhaps a camel caravan or a donkey caravan between two cities. Pag'u lehen goyim. Right? Goyim, attack them.
Well, it means attack them, pagu?
In this case, it means attack them. Va'amru, and said, Tanu lanu echad mikem v'narogoto, v'im lav harei anu hodim et kulam.
Yeah.
Right. So, translation from the middle of the second line. Give us one of you.
Uh-huh.
Right? Tanu lanu echad mikem. Literally, give us one of you.
Yeah.
Venarogoto, and we'll kill him. Vimlav, and if not, if you don't give one, Hare, behold, Anu Horgim et Kulam, behold, we are killing all of them. Okay? Give us one hostage and we'll kill him. And if you don't, we're killing the whole group. Period. The last word of the third line is an abbreviated word, a filu. Right? Only three letters are written, but it means the whole word. And now what it's telling us is the halakha in such a situation. Afilu kulan neharagim lo yimasru nefesh achad mi Yisrael. Even all are killed,
are
in danger of being killed, will not be handed over nefesh achad mi Yisrael. You're not allowed to hand over one Jew, even if the price is everyone being killed.
Lo yimasru means hand over.
Lo yimasru, like, you know, the word musrim are informers, people who hand over information. Limsors, to hand over, to inform, to give. You can't give over one Jew even to save everyone. And now we're on the beginning of the fifth line. Yichadu lehen echad kagon sheva ben bichri yimashru oto val yehargu, period. So now translation from the beginning of the line that I just read, the fifth line. Yichadu lehen echad, they designated for them one. In other words, the goyims told
the goyim
you which one, right, which one to give over. Yichadu lehen echad, they designated, language of yachad, of echad, they made one, they put their finger on one. Yichadu lehen echad, they designated for them one. Kagon, for example, Sheva bin Bichri, just like in the story, the people of the
you
city,
there, this name,
right, Yoav said, I want that one person, and they handed him over. So Yichadu lehen echad, kagon, for example, Sheva bin Bichri, Yimasru oto, will hand him over. Va'al yehergu, and will not be killed. You're allowed to hand over the one if he was designated by the goyim. They said who they wanted. Period.
So if they, as you say, if they designate somebody, then they can hand them over?
That's what it says. But if they didn't designate, you can't make the decision who you're going to hand over. And we can see the logic in it, right? Because we can't decide to kill someone. So now, there's a big question understanding this breakdown. There are three words, four words, that are not clear. And the four words that are not clear are the words in the middle of the fifth line, Kagon Sheva Ben Bichri. For example, or just like Sheva Ben Bichri. Why does the Braita mention the story? And there are two possible answers to that question. Why does the Braita mention the story from Shmuel Bet? One possible answer is simply to show a precedent that this was done in the past. They handed over someone when he was designated. That's one possible answer to the question why the Braita points out the matter of Sheva ben Bichri. But there's another possible answer why the Braita pointed out the case of Sheva ben Bichri. And that possible answer is as follows. Perhaps the Braita meant you can only hand over a designated person if the circumstances are similar to those that we found in the story. And what circumstances do we mean?
Rebellion against the
king. That he's guilty in some sense.
Yeah.
He's a criminal
David,
in some sense. He's not just any, it's not just the goyim don't like the color of his hair. If he's guilty, then you have to hand him over. If not, then not, perhaps. So then we continue on in the text.
Yachtu lehen echot. It means that the goyim pointed out this
yes,
guy?
Yes.
Not the group, the Jewish group, no. Not
right.
It's the goyim.
Right. Uh-huh. So I'll just say parenthetically that you can understand this is a very, very relevant halakha. And the halakhas just came up all the time.
How did the goyim know to point out to Sheva ben Bichri? They wouldn't know if he was convicted to die.
Well,
he's a convict.
In the case we had in Sefer Shmuel, it wasn't goyim against Jews, it was Jews against Jews.
It was the king. The king representative came and said, give me the rebel from the city.
Yeah.
And he was given up.
Uh-huh.
Right?
His head was given up.
Somebody from the city asks for him, you know, like that, for the Sheva. The goyim wouldn't know who if he was convicted to die.
Well, but it's like extradition, you know, supposing it...
Because they pointed out him.
Happened recently.
How would they know that he was a convict, you know, that he was...
Well, I could say, like, if the police come and they say, you know, the czarist police, and they come to the Jewish city and they say, there's a guy who robbed the bank at the next town over. We want him.
Yeah.
Give him to us.
Yeah.
His name was Sam. We got his picture.
They knew.
You've got to give him up.
Got to give him up.
That's what it's saying.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
They had the writing on him, you know. They knew about it.
Yeah.
yeah.
We got a picture of him from the video camera.
Yeah,
I see a video camera. Yeah.
And Amiram just said quietly that this actually is a matter of extradition in modern terms, and comes up not infrequently. So anyway, we said now we have a safek, we have a question, how to understand the Braita, why it mentions Sheva bin Bihri. Does it mean that the person has to be a known criminal, committed a crime?
Yeah.
So we go on, and it says, Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish.
I'm sorry.
Line 6. Middle of line 6. It's, right. The third word.
Oh. Aleph Rishis, Omer Rabbi.
Yes, Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. Vehu shiye chayav mita kesheva ben Bichri. And that is, that he is chayav mita like Sheva ben Bichri. In other words, according to Shimon ben Lakish, the reason the Braita mentions this specific story from Shmuel Bet is to say that the halach only applies if indeed he is chayav mita.
Right.
But if he's not Chayav Mita, we can't give him up, even if the Goyim designated one.
Right.
And then it says, the Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Af Al Pi, those three letters at the beginning of the line are an abbreviation, Af Al Pi, She'eino Chayav Mita Kesheva Ben Bichri, even though he's not Chayav Mita like Sheva Ben Bichri. In other words, says Rabbi Yochanan, the Braita mentioned Sheva ben Bichri only as a precedent, but not to say it has to be like it was there, that he is Chayav Mita.
How are you translating Afalp? Is it therefore?
Even though. Or despite the fact that he's not Chayav Mita, like Sheva ben Bichri, you still give him up as long as the Goyim designated one person. That's according to the interpretation of Yochanan, the Goyim could say, we want someone with blonde hair, and his name is such and such, and if it means you have to sacrifice one Jew to save the city, then you sacrifice one Jew, even that Jew is not guilty of anything, according to Rabbi Yochanan.
But why would Sheva ben Bichri be mentioned according to this?
Then only to tell you, show a precedent that such a thing once happened, but it doesn't have to be the same.
Handing somebody over.
Yeah,
okay.
But it doesn't have to be the same circumstances. And this is a big, big machloket. These things are really relevant in halakha lemaaseh. So now we have a story.
Well,
an interesting story.
Yeah.
And of course, we have not yet gotten to the connection to our Mishnah. So the story goes like this. And this story is in Aramaic, but it's not in Babylonian Aramaic. It's in Palestinian Aramaic. So it's not the Aramaic. I used the term of 40 years ago. I shouldn't have said that. I really agree with your comment. I don't like saying that. They used to call it Palestinian Aramaic. When they used to call this the Palestinian Talmud, as a translation of the Talmud Yerushalmi, it's the Talmud of the land of Israel. This is the Aramaic of the land of Israel going back 1,600 years ago. And it's different than Babylonian Aramaic.
Mm-hmm.
So we are on the line that ends...
Ula.
Like, which is 7 lines down. 8 lines down. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Ula. Ula is the name of a rabbi of the of Israel, in the land of Israel. Ula. I'm sorry, I said it wrong. How did I say that? There is a rabbi called Ula, but this is not about Ula. This is about a criminal called Ula bar Koshev. I'm sorry.
It's not a rabbi.
He's not a rabbi. There is a rabbi called Ula, and is in the Talmud, but this is someone else.
The story goes like this: a criminal.
Ula bar Koshev tavatei malchuta, which literally means that Ula bar Koshev, that's his name, tavatei, demanded him malchuta, the malchut, the sovereign.
The government wants to kill him.
Right, exactly. The government wants to kill this person. The government put a search warrant out for Ula bar Koshev.
Yeah.
Tavatei, tava means to demand. Tavatei is demanded him. They were looking for him. They were searching for him. After the word malchut, you put a period. Arak means he fled. Va'azel lei, Azel means he walked, he went. Azel lay, he Lud. Went, Lelud. You know, with the city of Lud.
City of Lud.
Gabay, and then you have a four-letter acronym, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi.
Uh-huh.
Reish Yud Bet Lamed is Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi.
Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi.
And the three, the word before
Gabay means two or toward.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or four. So this criminal, he fled and went to Lud by Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Atun. The word atun is like a word we've had in Babylon Aramaic, ata, which means to come. Atun, they came. In other words, the soldiers of the Malchut came. These are the Romans, right? This is an Eretz Israel. Atun. The Akfun. Akfun is language of hakafot.
They got them or something?
On Simchat Torah, we make hakafot. So what is Akfun?
Circled the house.
They circled the city. They circled the Medinta. Medina in modern Hebrew is a state, but in Aramaic it's a city. So they came and they encircled the city of Lud. Medinta is the city. Amru lehen, they said to them, and we'll soon see who sang to who, Im let atun yahavon le lan anan mecharvin medinta. So there are a few words that we know. You know the word mecharvin, right? Lachriv, cherev,
sword.
Mecharvin is we are destroying. Mecharvin is we are destroying. So let's read the whole sentence now. So the sentence began with the last word of the previous line. In lit atun yahavon le, which means if. The word in Aramaic of the Bible means yes, but in the Yerushalmi it means if. If the word let, we should remember. And remember the word the let? It means not. If not, atun. Atun means, we just had it earlier.
To, right. In the previous line.
Right. It's like to come, but here it's come in the causative. In other words, to give. If not, wait. I'm sorry. 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 Let me get it correct. Atun.
Yeah. You give us him.
Right, it means giving him.
Yeah.
Yahavun. Yahavele is to give. I'm sorry, I said it wrong. It's if not, atun here means atem, use. If not, you giving him, us. Right? If not, you giving him lan to us. If you're not giving him to us, anan we, machrivin, we're destroying Medina.
Destroy the Medina, yeah.
So if not you giving him to us, we destroying the city.
If you don't give him to us, yeah. Unless atun, you haven't left.
Atun means what?
Atun here means atem, you. Use.
You give. Yehovah means give.
So, what happens next? Salak Gabay Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Salak means to...
He was hiding there?
Wait a second. It means to go up. He went up Gabay towards Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi.
Oh, I mean the
criminal. The criminal went to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, yeah, in the city, Ufaisei, and he appeased him. You don't know who's the subject. It's the rabbi appeased the criminal. The Yehaveh loan, and he gave him to them. Yehaveh means he gave him loan to them. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi gave over the criminal. He gave over Ula bar Koshev to the Romans. period.
So now, say where the period is again?
After the word loan. To...
Okay.
Right.
Vi loan. Right,
yeah,
there?
Yeah. Loan, period. V'hava Eliyahu zechor latov yalef mitgalei aloyei v'lo itgalei. Translation. V'have means was. In this case, it means used to. And used to Eliyahu zechor latov, Elijah, may his memory be a blessing, teach, reveal to him, and he didn't reveal. So again, literally I said it means used to Eliyahu zechor latov, teach, reveal to him, and didn't reveal. What that means is that Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi used to have Eliyahu, the prophet, reveal to him on a constant basis. He would have visions, mystical visions. Mm-hmm. But once this event happened, Eliyahu stopped appearing to him. Didn't show up. Right? So to translate it more in context, Eliyahu Hanavi used to teach him and appear to him, and now he didn't appear.
Zechor means...
His memory be a blessing.
Yeah.
Zechor, memory for good. Remembered for good. We say that. Eliyahu Zechor
Latov. You say a good word for him, yeah.
So now in the last word of the line, Vitzam. What does that mean, Tzam?
Fasted.
He fasted. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi fasted so that Eliyahu would appear to him again, because he's really disturbed that his source of spiritual insight is darkened, is gone. Vitzam
kamatsumin. A lot of...
He fasts, many fasts. Fast,
many days, yeah.
Right? Vitgalei aloei. And he appeared to him. Eliyahu came back. Amalei. And he said to him, Ulamisurot ani nigla? To traitors do I reveal myself? Remember the word misurot, to hand over?
Yeah. Yeah.
To people who hand over, do I reveal myself? To traitors do I reveal myself?
Misurot is traitors.
Misurot means, turn over, yeah.
People who turn over. Other people.
Misurot, Misurot, yeah.
That's
something. Misurot is a word from handing over.
Right. Mr. Kell's right. Misurot means that which we hand over to the generation. So it means to hand over. Pretty good. That's pretty good. So Eliyahu says, do I reveal myself to traitors?
Yeah.
Amarle, right? Aleph Lamed? See that there? He said to him, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi answered Eliyahu, and he said, "Velo Mishnah asiti? Didn't I do the Mishnah? Didn't I do according to law? We read the Brit that said that you're allowed to hand someone over if the Goyim designated him."
Yeah.
And we don't know if it's a case in which this criminal was Chayav Mitah, and we hold in the Brit that you have to be Chayav Mitah, or perhaps the criminal wasn't Chayav Mitah, and the Brit tells you don't have to be Chayav Mitah. That's not clear. But whatever case, says Rabbi Shuvin Levi, I did according to halacha. What do you want from me?
Right.
I followed the law.
Yeah.
So what does Eliyahu say back to him? Eliyahu says back, Amarle, he said to him, V'zom mishnat chasidim? Is that the law of a chasidim? Well, that's only the law for normal Jews, but you I demand a higher standard of. That's the whole thing.
So it's a question. He's not saying...
Eliyahu is saying, V'zom mishnat chasidim?
It's a rhetorical question.
It's a rhetorical question.
It's not a question.
Is that the Mishnah for chasidim? No, that's only the Mishnah for normal people.
To turn them over?
So we have to think what that means. Eliyahu is saying that there's a written halakha, but then there's a higher standard. And you, as a chasid, should have followed a higher standard. Now, what is the higher standard that's being demanded of him?
Not to turn him over.
Which would mean what? The consequences would be?
Whole
city would be killed. So Eliyahu is demanding of Yeshua ben Levi to be Mikadesh Shem Shamayim, to sacrifice his life and the life of the whole city in order not to hand over one Jew, even though he was designated. We're being asked to go beyond the letter of the law and sacrifice our lives for a ideal that is beyond. And that's the meaning of Mishnat Chasidim, to sacrifice your life for a higher ideal. That brings us back to our Mishnah. In other words, it's a connotation of Hasidut that it's not just going beyond the letter of the law. It's going beyond the letter of the law and thereby sacrificing your life. That's what it means to be a Hasid. And that, of course, reminds us of the Maccabim, that we're willing to, at the beginning of their battle, to sacrifice their lives and not fight on Shabbat, even though the result...
I mean, it's not just you as the Hasid sacrificing your life, but sacrificing your
right.
Life.
At the beginning, they didn't fight on Shabbat. And as Hasidim, to be a Hasid is to sacrifice your life. When the halakha might not demand it.
Not only demand it, I think the halakha was you had to fight.
So that seems to be a later development.
Oh, that's later.
So with all that, we can go back to our Mishnah that talks about... Where does the Mishnah talk about sacrificing your life?
Not answering the king and the snake.
Yeah.
And that certainly is a different Hebrew in the Shalmi.
It's extremely difficult.
It's difficult. It's not the real Hebrew.
It's Aramaic, first of all.
It's not Aramaic, either. It's not Aramaic and it's not Hebrew.
It's Aramaic, not of Babylonia, but it's a different dialect.
A different Aramaic,
Not Telsi. It's Yerushalmi Aramaic.
Yeah,
it's very hard.
Okay, so now we go to work. So now, in this question sheets, we skipped a little bit, so we're beginning. I'll just show you where it is in the question sheets.
Where's the question sheet?
Right. So in the question sheets, we just did F together. We just did F together.
That's the Yerushalmi.
That's the Yerushalmi. And we're also going to do something else in F together. You see the Tosfot Anshei Shem, like I've pointed out to you. Here's the beginning of F.
Do you have the
and after some questions, I have the Tosfot Anshei Shem. But also we're going to do it together because it's just too hard to do separately. And I hope there'll be some time left for Chavrut. There might not be. We're doing F.
Oh, just did
F. But there's another part of F. After question 3 or 4, see it says Tosfot Anshei Shem. We're going to do that together also.
I don't have that page. I don't know what happened to it.
It's from the other day. It's separate.
Yeah, you don't have it here.
I don't have it here.
But that's okay.
I think I've been
okay.
Missing that day.
So let's remember what the Mishnah says.
So I'm sorry. Yeah. So I've got F, and I've got 1, 2, 3, and then
questions.
I've got Hebrew line, and then I've got a 2.
Oh, that's a misprint. It should be you have 1, 2, 3, then another Hebrew source,
yes.
And then it should be a 4 instead of a...
So these numbers should keep going.
Yes.
4, 5, 6, 7.
Yeah.
And so are we right before 4?
And then we're going to, exactly, right before 4,
okay.
To learn the Tosfot Anshei Shem, which is this page. I think it's the first page of the source sheet.
Oh, we've worked on that before.
Yeah, we did the Tosfot Anshei Shem at the beginning, but here's another passage in Tosfot Anshei Shem, a long one, and fascinating. And in order to, of course, understand the Tosfot Anshei Shem, you're in the right place. We're going to have to just remember, make sure we remember the Mishnah, right? Make sure we remember the Mishnah. We did the beginning of it, but not the end. To remember the Mishnah, we can just look at the Mishnah right here. That's the traditional Mishnah. Or you can look in your original page, doesn't matter. Right, but the part of the Mishnah we're focusing on now is, as David said, Afilu HaMelech. And anyone need help finding those words? Afilu HaMelech?
Where are you again?
Afilu HaMelech.
Okay, got it.
Afilu HaMelech Shoel B'Shlomo Lo Yeshivenu. Even if the king is asking his peace, you know, how are you? Lo Yeshivenu, don't answer him if you're in the middle of davening. Afilu Nachash Karuch HaLakevo, and even if a snake is wound about his ankle, Lo Yafsik, you shouldn't stop. And remember also, of course, the beginning of the Mishnah talked about Hasidim Rishonim, right? The concept Hasidim, the word was there in the Mishnah. The Hasidim Rishonim used to wait a whole hour before davening. And then it goes on to say, if the Melech, the king says hello, if the snake is around your ankle, don't stop. And of course, we read the Mishnah, 2 weeks ago, and you said, wait a second, is it telling you to risk your life for davening? Davening isn't even a mitzvah d'oraita.
Yeah.
The king, you know, might cut off your head, the snake might bite you, and it says, don't stop. How could that be? So now things start making sense to us, because we saw the Yerushalmi, and there's this concept of chassidim, who risk their lives, give their lives beyond the letter of the law. So the obvious conclusion might be that just like the Mishnah in the earlier part mentioned the chassidim rishonim that used to wait an hour before davening, that's not the halakha. That's what they did. That's the chassidim rishonim. The halakha is just ein omdim. Don't go immediately into davening, but have some covid rosh. But the chassidim gave it a full hour. And then when our Mishnah goes on and talks about the king and a talk about the snake, the obvious conclusion we should come to is that that's not the halakha, that's the chassidic halakha. Yeah. That's the chassidic standard, which means literally to risk your life for davening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Those are and special, that's not the law.
Special devoted people.
Yeah, that's the law of Eliyahu HaNavi, yeah. Right? Who appears to chassidim.
The chassidim rishonim.
Chassidim rishonim. So, so we're going to read the Tosfot on Sheshem that comes very close to saying what we just said.
What year on was
Tosfot on Sheshem is an Acharon who simply quotes earlier Mishnah commentators. I'll show you. If you see the end of our quote from the Tosfot on Sheshem, right after the bracket are parentheses. Mm-hmm. And the parentheses say Lamed Chet Shin. Right after my bracket, there are parentheses. And those parentheses tell you where he got what we're reading. And it's Lamed Chet Shin, which is Lechem Shemayim, bread from heaven. It's the name of an earlier Acharon.
Tosfot
Sheshem is Acharon. He's quoting an Acharon. Simply because Mishnah is not learned very often as an independent text, as you know, it's learned as part of the Gemara. Therefore, there aren't that many independent commentaries on the Mishnah, and those that there are often are not published, they're in manuscript. So the Tosfot on Sheshem took upon himself to collect many of those commentaries and put them around the Mishnah. Believe me, most of his commentaries, most Talmidei Chachamim never heard of. Because most Talmidei Chachamim don't learn Mishnah.
Why?
Why? Because Talmud has supplanted learning of Mishnah. Again, you can ask me why. But that's another...
And the Chumash.
And the Chumash, right. Learning Talmud has supplanted Chumash. Right? And we're, of course, trying in our own small way to rectify the issue. Okay, so here we are. You see my bracket there at the beginning of our passage? It's right over here where my finger is.
Yeah.
It's a very small print, and it's very difficult language, and it's in Rashi script.
Oh, sorry.
So, get out your magnifying glasses.
Oh, boy.
You can't see anything? I did.
Blow it up on one of these copy machines?
I did. Okay. Heicha ditarud machmat nachash. Where that he's preoccupied
watching the
because of a snake.
Say that again.
Of course. Where that he's preoccupied because of snake.
You got it, David? Yeah.
Yeah. Or Chafdalid, abbreviation, Kol Davar, anything. Or anything Hamatrido, that preoccupies him.
Yeah.
Biyuter. In the extreme.
More, yeah.
So just say the whole thing together. Where that is preoccupied because of a snake or anything that's preoccupying him extremely, ad, until, Shin Aleph Aleph. Shi E Efshar. That it's impossible. Until it's impossible, lo lechaven. Impossible for him to concentrate, yeah. As Mr. Galler said.
Shemutter lehapsik tefilosay, lehaysi laduva.
Next word of the line, of the next word, I'm sorry, yeah. Next line, it's hard to find the place, right? Which line is it? Kuraui, as is fitting. So let me tell you, it's good to take another piece of paper and help you to follow the line.
I'm just not following it, that's okay. I'm not following it. I'm pretending to.
I don't have to write this off.
Say that again, how did you define kuraui?
Kuraui, as is fitting.
Okay.
Shemutar lapsik tfilato. That it's fitting, or I'm sorry, that it's mutar, that it's permitted to interrupt his tfila. Vilahasir, and to remove hadavar, the matter, hamuno, that's preventing him
from his brain,
mi kavanato, from his
head,
focus. Let's focus. So I'm going to stop and just say again everything I said. I'm just going to read it in English again. Where that he's preoccupied because of a snake or anything that's preoccupying him extremely, until it's impossible for him to focus as is fitting, that it's permitted to interrupt his tefillah and to remove the thing that's preventing his focus.
Is this the tefillah, is that the Shemoneh Esrei, or?
Yes. Okay. Yes. So, after reading that line, we said to ourselves, wait a second, he just contradicted the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, don't interrupt yourself. And he just said, if anything is preventing you, like a snake, from concentrating, he just said, you can stop and remove the thing that's preventing. So he's contradicting the Mishnah, right? Period. And then he goes on to say, "Vegam libi omerli," and also my heart says to me. See the words, "Vegam libi omerli," and also my heart says to me. So if a commentator says, my heart says to me, you know he's on shaky ground. As he's saying, I'm going to tell you something that I don't have a source for. I don't have a basis. I don't have a tradition for. But this is my intuition. V'gam libi omer li, dehach seifa, nami a resha kai. Dechasidim harishanim osin kein. Translation. And also my heart tells me that this seifa, this sof of the Mishnah, this end of the Mishnah,
second part of the Mishnah,
nami aresha kai, also on the resha, on the rosh, in the beginning of the Mishnah, is referring of Hasidim Mushanim, did thus.
Only they did thus, yeah.
So what he's saying is that the last part of the Mishnah that says even the snake and even the king don't stop for them, he says, my heart tells me it's a halakha not for us but for Hasidim Rishonim. Now, we won't read the rest of it because it will take too long, but I want to tell you what it says. Mm-hmm. What he just said to me is beautiful and clear and fits. It contradicts the Gemara, as we'll see today. So then the Tosfot on Trishim goes on to explain why it doesn't contradict the Gemara, what he's saying, even though it does. Because he doesn't want to contradict the Gemara. But we won't go further, but I think that's the pshat. The pshat is that this is a Hasidim Mushanim Mishnah. except for the first line that said Eino Medim. The rest of it about the Chasidim Rishonim would wait an hour, and then the snake, and then the king. It's a halakha for Chasidim Rishonim, which for us is a model, but it's not the halakha. It's the Mishnat Chasidim for those who have Eliyahu appearing to them.
He's not talking to everybody. He's only talking to the Chasidim Rishonim.
Right. That seems to be the pshat.
Yeah.
So now we go into the Gemara. So let's see. What time is it? How are we going
to
do this?
10:45.
So we're not going to have time for Chavruta today. So I guess we could do one of two things. We could just go on and learn the Gemara together, or we can take a 5-minute break and then learn the Gemara together. Which do we do? You are tired? Do you want to take a break or just go on?
Okay.
Right? Okay, so we'll just go on and we'll just learn the Gemara together.
Whatever you decide.
Okay, so the Gemara. The Gemara is Lamed Bet Amud Bet.
Lamed Bet Amud Bet. Lamed Bet Amud Bet. I got it.
Yeah.
Vav. We're learning Vav.
And we're learning Vav, right? So, why don't we do like a chavrut together that'll give you everyone a little chance to work it out and also give me the chance to eat my bagel while we're learning. So I'll just get my bagel.
You wanted to break. That's what you wanted.
I did not do that because I want
the
break.
Well,
I want to learn. I want to learn. No, I want to learn Torah. So you guys read and I'll comment.
Yeah.
Begin. It's above.
Filo Amela.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you say start?
Above,
the bottom of the
ladder.
Yeah.
If the king, Shoyo, the Shlomo, asks after your
head
come,
he shakes hands with him.
Don't respond. So this is quoting from our mission.
Mm-hmm.
Omar Rabbi Yosef says, Lo Shanu Ewa Lamalke. Israel.
Don't respond. Except to a king of Israel.
Mm-hmm. What does Shanu mean?
Yeah.
Like taunt?
Only for the Jewish kings.
Mm-hmm.
Taunt.
Mm-hmm.
The Jewish kings.
Taunt to like Lishinantam Bonetam to Lunetam. It wasn't taught, I guess, with respect to, except with respect to kings of Israel, but for secular kings, other kings, whatever you interrupt.
Why doesn't he have to answer the king of Israel? And he has to interrupt himself the services for the king of the Goyim.
Why?
Why? Because the king of Israel understands.
Mm-hmm. King of Israel won't kill him.
Not to come and interrupt him in the middle of
it. Well, if he says, oh, you walk up to somebody and mistake, oh, I see you're davening, okay, I know why you're not answering me. That's what the king of Israel is supposed to do.
Yeah.
We count on him to do that.
It's just when the rabbi comes in the middle of the Shemoneh Esrei and starts talking to you.
Right. You don't have to answer.
You don't have to answer the rabbi. You just stay and complete your Shemoneh Esrei, your tefillah.
So the Gemara doesn't want to see this last part of the Mishnah as telling you to sacrifice your life. Okay, let's go on.
But the king, but to the king who knows,
Malchai Umasuola means Goyim, a Goyish king.
Oh, who knows? What's that word mean? So,
a Gentile king.
It's nations like, it's the Umot HaMichadot, it's the United Nations. Yeah, I mean, it's not
like answer.
What does posek mean?
Posek means the answer.
To interrupt.
To interrupt. Ah. Interrupt in order to respond.
Okay.
So that's the end of the statement of Rabbi Yosef. Okay? That you don't risk your life. If it's a non-Jewish king, you posek, you stop. When the Mishnah said you don't posek, you don't stop, you don't answer, it meant the Jewish king is not going to kill you.
Yeah.
Okay, let's go on.
And that has a practical I'm trying to think this through. That has a practical application. The king would show up where Jews were praying.
To me, it's just saying, it's just
the
point of this is to just nullify the mission.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what it's really saying.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, you would say the governor comes, or the soldier comes, etc. The Roman soldiers come and interrupting me. It said even if the king came, I can't interrupt. Oh, no, it didn't mean that. It meant the Jewish king.
Right.
But, of course, if it's a real danger, it's disrespectful to the king. I'm allowed to be disrespectful to the king because I'm davening. But I'm not called on to sacrifice my life. So if the soldier comes, not the king, but if it's the soldier comes, I'm allowed to interrupt because it's danger to my life. To me, that's what the point is.
Yeah, or I guess, but also like the non-Jewish king. You know, basically somebody who doesn't know better, where they might take you're finishing your Shemoneh Esrei as you know,
it's so disrespectful
right.
that they have to kill you.
Right.
Even
somebody like that.
Today, to say so many years ago,
make sure people do what they say.
The goyim already
right.
were a danger to the Jews. The goyim, the Christians were, non-Jewish, were a danger to the Jewish people. So many years ago, you know how many thousands of years ago.
Right.
They still hated us, and they still hate us now. I think so. Some of them do.
It's a long history of anti-Semitism.
Yeah. Even in those days, it was still a danger to be a Jew.
And there were stories about, if I remember correctly, about people would just do it. Well, it's like the story of the temple, destruction of the temple, there's so-and-so, and...
Oh, yeah.
Right.
What about? What's his name? Oh,
Kamsa and Bar Kamsa. The people just do stuff to force you to be disrespectful to the Romans.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They were your enemy.
The one that I fought for my three girls.
So he set up
the
Kohanim to be disrespectful.
In Sweden.
And so people, you can imagine, some enemy saying to the soldier, oh, go ask it. He doesn't respect you. Go try and talk to him, see what happens.
Right.
Yes.
He'll ignore you, believe me, because he doesn't respect you.
Mm.
Yeah.
So this is to alleviate that.
Right. Uh-huh.
And a Christian king can kill a Jew anytime he wants. You know, like that. He was in danger to be killed with a non-Jewish king. Isn't that something?
Let's go on. So, David, you're reading?
Yeah.
I think you were reading, so just...
Part.
So you've done your part, okay.
You want me to read it?
So but Mr. Gallen.
Okay. Mesivi, that's a question, right? I'm a spalel, baru anos bo bukanegdoi. If he does the Shemoneh Esrei, he prays, and he sees a danger coming against him.
That word anas is a danger. Specifically,
anas is a danger.
It's a noun.
Anas
and
it means a danger.
It means a person who is a violent person, a danger, like Mr. Gallus said.
And then
he seems a violent person coming towards him, kenegdo, towards him.
Yeah, a violent person. Lo yehei mafsik, he should not interrupt.
Wait, you skipped a few words.
Ru karon bukanegdo.
Right. What's that?
Karon. What is Karon? Karon is a...
We had in the Mishnah last month. A Karon. You're traveling in the Karon?
Caravan.
A caravan.
Hmm. Not exactly. A Karon is a wagon. A car. A car that's part of a... being drawn by donkeys or something.
Car?
Uh-huh.
A car.
A wagon.
A wagon.
Could that be dangerous also, a wagon like that? Could be dangerous.
Well, what does the sentence mean exactly?
Yeah. Ru karon bu kenegdoi. Such a wagon comes, a dangerous wagon, could be dangerous.
But what does it mean exactly? So everyone understands you, Mr. Geller.
Would kenegdo mean?
He sees a car coming, kenegdo. What does that mean?
He comes against him. On him. Straight. Kenegdo means right against him.
Right?
Against
him. Yeah. It means you're standing in the middle of 635 and you see... bus coming towards you.
In his direction.
And you're davening. What do you do?
Yeah, connect means in his direction.
Yeah.
So either you see a violent person coming towards you, or you see a bus coming towards you.
Lo yehe mapsik, he should not interrupt himself. El mekatzel v'oilo, he should shorten this the prayer.
And ole.
Yeah.
And get out of there. Well, that means to go up, to get out of there.
Right. And get out of there, yeah. Get away from that place.
So, just remember the word that was used to introduce this brayta. The third to last word in the second line, meteve, means an objection from a brayta. Meteve means an objection from a brayta. And there's a letter missing at the end of the word. What letter?
Nun.
Mektevin, it means we are objecting.
Yeah.
What's the objection?
Mektevin means missing from a brayta?
No, it means we are objecting from a, on the basis of brayta.
Objecting to what came before on
yes,
with this brayta as our support, not
yes.
I don't agree with this brayta.
Correct.
Okay.
We're using the following brayta to object to what you just said.
Yeah.
Because and then follows is the brayta.
And follows is the brayta. Rav Yosef said, basically, that you don't have to risk your life, right? That's what Rav Yosef said?
Right.
Whereas this brayta says that even if a bus is coming towards you, don't stop.
Just shorten. Shorten the service, but don't stop completely.
And the editor seems to assume that if you just shorten but don't stop, you might be killed. And that contradicts Rav Yosef that said, don't get yourself killed.
Yeah, mekatzer means shorten, like ole, and you get away from the place.
So the answer that we give in order to reconcile Rav Yosef with the brayta is, the answer is?
Lokasha.
It's not difficult.
No problem.
No problem.
There's no problem. Who the yapshel lekatzer, yekatzer. If he can shorten it, he has a chance to shorten it and be away and keep and get away from the place, he should shorten it.
Right.
If he can get away in time.
But you're too quick for everyone. I have to say every word.
Means that.
Right? Yeah. That brayta is talking about dafshar likatzer yikatzer.
If he has a possibility to shorten.
Then shorten. Right?
Then shorten, yeah.
Dafshar likatzer, that it's possible to shorten yikatzer, you can shorten.
That's a possibility. V'yim lo, and if he doesn't have a possibility, forsake, he interrupts the service.
Right. So we're saying that when the brayta said you shouldn't posake, you should just lekatzer, it meant if you can. But if you can't, then get out of there quickly.
Yeah.
So we managed to reconcile Rav Yosef with the brayta.
Yeah.
Okay. And now we have an interesting story, which is very similar to the stories that we were just creating a few minutes ago about what might have happened with soldiers and Romans and kings.
You want me to say that?
Yeah, say it.
Maase b'chassid echa.
You forgot the first two introductory words.
Otona rabbonan. The rabbonan learned.
In a brayta.
In the brayta. Maase b'chassid echa. It happened by a chassid, by one chassid, one chassid.
Right. Once upon a time. Like Maase is like once upon a time.
Shehoyim espala baderech. He said the tefillah in on his way.
In the derech, right? In the middle of an open place.
He was in the middle of a road or something like that. Bo Hegman Echot came in one... Hegman means...
A Hegman is a Greek word.
A Greek word.
Or a Roman word. A Latin
soldier?
Word.
What is that?
Yeah, soldier. It's a soldier in English. Hegemony, right?
Hegemon, yes.
Yeah.
Like power over.
Right. Yeah.
Bo Hegman Echot, come one soldier, but Natan lo shalom. He gives him shalom. He shakes hands with him.
Who did who? Who said shalom to who?
The soldier shakes hands with the guy who prayed.
Right.
With him. With him who prayed. Who was in the middle of the tefillah. But lo hechsa lo shalom. He did not answer him. He did not shake his hands with
him. Right. He didn't return to him
peace.
He didn't
return for his shalom.
Right. He just kept davening.
Right. Him tillo, he waited.
For him. Right, the soldier
waited
for him.
Until he finished the tefillah. He waited. He delayed shaking hands with him until...
No. This is the soldier. The soldier waited there.
Yeah.
Until...
He ended the tefillah.
Right.
What's the word waited?
Himtin.
himtin. I mean, he waited for him, right? Mm-hmm. He delayed it. At shesiyam tefilus, until he finished the tefillah.
So who, the he that's waiting is the soldier?
The soldier.
The soldier was waiting.
Because the man didn't respond.
Yeah, the soldier isn't going to kill him immediately. He's going to do something
before
he kills him.
The man was waiting to respond.
No.
Like acha shesiyam tefilus, after he finished the tefillah. After the Jewish man finished the tefillah, he tells him, Reku.
Who's talking to who? The soldier's going to talk.
The soldier's talking to the Jew.
Right.
He says to him, Reku, stupid. You're something like, you're stupid, he said.
Right.
You're stupid.
Literally, Reku means empty, yeah. Empty person.
You are silly. You're stupid.
You're good for nothing.
Of it's written, but to Rasham, in your Torah, it's written. In your holy Torah, it's written.
Mm-hmm.
You should observe the Torah, and you should sometime, at the same time, you should watch your life.
You should guard your life.
Guard your life.
Nafshecha.
Right.
Guard your life.
Shmo nafshecha. My English may not be so good, but I know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
My English is not like yours, you know, but I...
Good enough?
I interpret it according to my English. It also is written in another place,
mm-hmm.
in another place in the Torah. When Ishmartim Meyod Lanafshachem, you should always watch your bodies.
Guard Ma'od, right?
Guard Meyod. You should always watch you for your life, for your nefesh.
Right. So just let me stop
for
a second.
How does the soldier know this?
That's a good question. You can obviously, you know, assume that historians and theologians have a good time learning this brayta. It's interesting material here. That the non-Jewish soldiers using the Torah against the Jew. And it's very sophisticated because the verses that are being quoted in the pshat, they don't mean the way they're being used here. In the pshat, it just means be very careful to keep the mitzvot. But the Chamim interpreted these verses to mean the mitzvah of saving your own life,
pikuach
nefesh.
Right.
So this soldier knows not just Torah shebichtav, he also knows Torah shebal peh. And he's saying, how did you risk your life? Didn't you know I was going to kill you? It's against your own Torah, okay?
Right. And the Torah says we have to watch your life. Kashinasati l'chusholam, when I give you shulam, when I stretched out my hand to shake with you, lomuloy hechzar to l'chusholam, why didn't you return your
greeting, your peace, right?
Your hands.
See the words?
Why didn't you shake hands with me? Im huyisichotech roshu basayit. If I would have cut off your head with a sword,
right? Basayit is a sword.
With a sword.
Just like a cherif.
Yeah. Mi hoyu tovei asdom kumayudi. Who would have demanded your blood from me?
Right, who would have done anything? You know, I'm free
to
do whatever I want to.
Who would have done anything to me? Because in the Torah it's written that you have to watch yourself.
No, here it means because I'm a soldier and you're just a Jew.
Right.
I can do whatever I want.
Yeah.
There were no Jewish soldiers?
Well, I guess, but the implication is that you were, the person who was davening was...
breaking the law.
Breaking the law, so who would have, you know, who would have said that the soldier wasn't in his right to...
Okay, could be.
You know.
Okay,
right.
Tovea means to demand.
Uh-huh. Right.
Who would have demanded your blood from me?
Who would have brought your blood to justice? Who would have made me responsible for it?
Right, exactly.
Nobody would have made
Dam has your blood.
The Torah says it's permitted to do that. Mm-hmm. See? Yeah.
Omalo,
he said. Amtali ache she fayeshu bedvorim.
Wait. What does that mean? That's a little bit hard to translate.
Wait for me until I will please you. Fayes will please you.
Please, right. In other words, the guy says, don't kill me until you give me time to talk. Wait until I please you
with my words.
With my words. Right.
Appease
you with my words, yeah. That's right. That's the right English. I said it. Omalo.
Wait a second.
Yeah.
Afayescha.
Afayescha.
That I will appease you.
Appease you. With my answer.
Root is Pei Yud Samech.
And Hamten is Wait.
Hamten is Wait, right? That's the same word we had a little bit earlier. Mm. At the end of a line. Yeah.
Okay, you got it?
What was it? You know, I appease you with my words.
Until I satisfy you with my answer.
Hamten was...
Wait.
Hamten Lee means wait. Atshef I yes with whom until...
Wait for me.
You wait for me until I appease you, until I make you... I give you a right answer.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's right.
With Vurim, with words. I give you an answer with words.
Mm-hmm.
Omar lo, he said, Eli hu yiti omet lut nemelach busavadom. If you would have standing, he told him, if you would have stand before a king of a regular king from busavadom means
blood and
just a
meat and blood.
Flesh and blood. Right? So he says, if I had been standing in front of a Melech Basar Vadam... I'm sorry, if you, Mitzvah was right, if you had been standing, the Jew says to the soldier, if you had been standing...
The Lord soldier would have stepped in front of the king.
Yeah.
And your better friend, one of your best friends, come to you and give you shalom. He shakes hands with you. He probably wouldn't have interrupted himself.
Well, let's see. Let's read on.
Yeah.
Right. So it says the soldier. It says the Jew to the soldier.
Yeah.
If you had been standing in front of a king of Sarvadam,
and one of your best friends
came and gave you peace and said to you, Hayita Machzielo.
Second part. Hayita. Let me see where this is.
Get you the page.
Lamet Gimel. Lamet Gimel.
Here it is. Right.
Hayita Machzielo.
What does that mean?
Would you pay attention to him? Would you do something for him? In other words, Machzielo means answer him.
Right.
Answer.
Right. Would you return the greeting?
Yeah, the greeting, yeah. That's interesting. An interesting story, yeah. Omar Lo, the soldier said to him, are you ready for that? Omar Lo.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you.
The soldier answered, Beim hu yiti machzelo. If I would have shake hands with him, my hoyu osim lacho.
Wait, slowly. The third word, Omar Lo, love. Period.
Love, yeah. No.
As the soldier said,
I
wouldn't have interrupted my conversation with the king to say hello to my friend of fame. The soldier
because
said, "Lo."
The king, he wouldn't interrupt the king. Yeah.
Right. And then it goes back.
If people would have even shake hands with him, if people have done it with him.
And that's the Jew talking again.
That's the front. Yeah. Vim yite machzelo, mo hoyu oisem
lacho. What's machzelo?
The Jew said to the soldier, if you would have shaken hands with him, what would the king do to you? What would the king do to you? What would have happened to you?
Excuse me, back up. Omar Lo, the soldier answered love. Did you say that
no.
was?
No, I would not have interrupted my conversation with the king in order to say hello to my friend.
He would have been afraid for his own king.
What's the love doing at the end of love?
That's just the way it is. Love.
Add a letter here.
Love means no.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. By him, koyiti machzelo, and if you would have, the Jew is also talking. This is the Jew talking. By him, koyiti machzelo, if you would have shaken hands
with
your best friend, ma ho you osim lacho, what would the king have done to you? What would have happened to you?
Mm-hmm.
What would have happened to you?
Mm-hmm.
Omar lo. You got it?
Yep.
What would have happened to you? Omar lo, the soldier answered now, Hoyu chotchim et roshi basayim. They would have cut my head with a sword.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Omarlo, he said, Velo devorim kal v'chomer.
Who's talking now?
Yeah, the Jew talking now. Velo devorim kal v'chomer. Your words are a kal v'chomer to me. In other ways, it's bad for me too, when I would have done it, you know, to you.
It was kal v'chomer literally?
Yeah. Oma atu.
Make sure you understand.
A kal v'chomer means
all the more so.
All the more so. Yeah. He took a kal v'chomer from that, from that what he answered him. You know.
Uma
atu sheyitu omet of nei melech busa b'dom shahayim kan emucha b'kever.
And
you
what?
Were standing in front of a plain king, who is a busa b'dom, who is a plain flesh and meat, flesh and dumb, blood. In blood, Shahayam Ka, what, today he lives here, Umukha Bakeva, and tomorrow he will be dead. In other words, just a plain king who can be destroyed tomorrow. Mm-hmm. He can be killed or he can die, anything can happen to that king. And you was afraid of him so much. Kach, Ani.
Wait a second, Kach. In other words, what is turning
like
a king of the sort that is kach, that you shouldn't interrupt, that it's thus, that you shouldn't interrupt for a king of the Sarvadam, then, kama, no, kach, then kama, stop, kach, stop,
kama,
it's thus in the case of a Basavadam king.
Thus me.
Then Ani
I'm standing for the king of the world, of the Kodesh Baruch Hu, the holy of the whole world. Shei Chai V'Kayim Lo'ad. He exists the rest of all his life. You know, like that.
Forever and ever and ever.
La'ad
u'lomei olamim.
U'lomei olamim, ever and ever. Halachas kamu v'kamu. I mean, I would have been afraid more. I would have had to be afraid more
right.
For him.
Right, kama v'chama means all the more so.
Than for a king who lives only a short while, a short time. Miyot.
Just let me tell everyone, this is on the quiz next week.
Yeah.
There are two different expressions in this brayta for the phrase all the more so. One is kal v'chomer, and the other is alachad kama v'chama. They both mean the same thing.
Yeah.
All the more so.
There's no difference.
No.
Why does it mean interchangeably?
As far as I know, they're used interchangeably. One opens the statement and one closes the statement, but it could be used differently, that the other one would open, the other would close.
Right. Alachas kamu v'kamu means
you wouldn't use them to get a kal v'chomer two places. We need to use one.
No, you can use the same phrase.
Same phrase, yeah.
Okay, it's like they say.
Kamu v'kamu means.
It's like they say that I learned this when I was in sixth grade, that the Eskimos have lots of words for snow, so the Jews have lots of words for all the more so.
Yeah, all the more so we should have been afraid for the God, for the Almighty God. We should have been more afraid for him.
Right.
Than
right.
For a king who lives only a short life.
The phrase you just described, is it all four of the words or just the last two words?
All four.
Allah has come over kama means...
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's remind everyone, there's a song we sing at the end of the Seder on Pesach. Alecha kama v'chama. At the end of Dayenu, right?
Mm-hmm.
At the end of Dayenu. We say, good of enough for Kodesh Baruch Hu did X, if he only had done Y, and then he said, all the more, did all these things, so we have to praise him. Alachad kama v'chaba, Torah, Tova, whatever it is.
Miyot, immediately, Nespias Oisei Hegmon. He was pleased. Oisei Hegmon, the soldier, was pleased with the answer. The soldier got pleased with the Jew's answer. The Jew answered him right. V'niftar Oisei Chosid, and he permitted the Chosid Labeis HaLeshulam, and he permitted him to go home in peace.
Yeah.
He did not kill him, he just permitted him to go home in peace.
Let's just say the exact meaning of the word niftar. Many people have heard the word niftar in a different context.
To pass away.
It's a euphemism. Niftar means to go away.
Yeah.
So it says that the Jew went away.
Yeah.
Niftar to a chassid, went away that chassid to his house in peace. What's the moral of the story? You have to ask us.
Well, but so you wouldn't interpret it as he went to his greater house and rest in peace.
I don't think so.
Nifdar, right?
What did you write?
There certainly might be such an interpretation somewhere, but that's not the pshat.
Can you read this?
So as far as the pshat goes here, let's just put everything together. We have a number of different levels of discussion here. First, we have the Mishnah, right? It seems to say Rishir Light.
Read it, what it says in here. The spies, what does it say here?
I don't know, one of my students wrote something in too small print. So just listen to the summary here. The Mishnah says basically, it seems to say risk your life.
Right.
Rav Yosef says it doesn't say that, because it's only talking about Jewish kings and not Jewish kings. So you don't risk your life. And then we get the Braita, was what is a mitve, as an objection. And the Braita seems to say, you should risk your life, because the Braita said you have a bus coming at you, don't stop, just shorten. So the Braita seems to say you should risk your life, but then the explanation comes, the Braita only meant you should shorten as opposed to stop when you can. But if you have to stop, then you should stop. So then we, at that point, said even the Braita agrees you shouldn't risk your life. And then we brought this Braita of the Hasid. So this Braita seems to push us in a different direction. It seems to say that the Hasid did the right thing, and he did risk his life. On the other hand, he's called the Hasid, which might be telling us that him risking his life was good for him, because he's a Hasid.
Because he was
but not necessarily for us.
Hasidim Rishonim.
Because like the Hasidim Rishonim, they act like that. So the conclusion, or the reason why the text brought the Braita is not 100% clear. Is it to push us in the direction of saying we should go back to original interpretation of the Mishnah, the Pshat that says you do risk your life? Or is it saying the opposite, that you don't risk your life, but it's only, there is a small group that does risk your life. They have a separate law. They're the Hasidim. Let's go on and read more material. So now it says, just going on where we left off. Where we left off. And here it's quoting the Gemara, Afilu nachash karuch ala kevo lo yafsik. Right, quoting the Gemara, Amar av sheshet, lo shanu ele nachash. Aval akrav posek. Says Rav Yosef, it's not learned except, I'm adding words now, concerning nachash. It's only said concerning snakes. Aval akrav, but scorpions posek.
So that's a scorpion, posek.
So I'll ask a simple question. What is the what's the tenor? What's the purpose of what Rav Sheshet is doing? If he's saying it's only snakes and not scorpions,
he's limiting.
Limiting, and he's, what type of snake is he referring to? Probably.
Non-poisonous.
Non-poisonous
snakes.
That snakes opposed to scorpions. Scorpions' assumption being are poisonous. Snakes, there some aren't. So you have to look at the snake to really decide if you stop davening or not. If it's a poisonous snake, then you stop davening and get out of there. If it's a non-poisonous snake, you should continue davening. So it means Rav Sheshet is going in the same direction as Rav Yosef on the previous page. He's limiting this halakha to a place of non-danger.
Yeah.
Just like earlier we said, it's Jewish kings but not non-Jewish kings. In a sense, we said it was non-poisonous kings, but it didn't refer to poisonous kings. So the same thing here. Refers to non-poisonous animals, but as far as poisonous animals, you should be mafsik. So now we get to a mitive, which is an objection, right? You said it's an objection from a braita. Nafal legov arayot. He fell into a den of lions.
Lion.
Just like Daniel in a den of lions. He fell into a den of lions. Ein mi'idim alav shemit. We don't testify on him that he's dead. In other words, we have a woman in front of us whose husband has disappeared, and we want to know, can she remarry? Do we assume the husband is dead? So if you have two witnesses that say they saw lions eating the man, then we say he's dead and she's a widow. We have testimony. But what if the witnesses did not see the lions eating him? The witnesses only saw him falling into lions then, but we don't know what happened afterwards. Do we assume he's dead or not? And it says, "Ein mi'idim alav shemet." We don't have testimony that he's dead. In other words, the testimony that fell into the den is not considered to be testimony that he's dead. You have to see the lions eating him. Then it says, "Nafal lechafira mlea nechashim v'akrabim." He fell into a ditch full of snakes and scorpions. The halacha is mi'idim alav shemet. We have testimony on him that he's dead. In other words, if the two witnesses say, "I saw him falling into a pit, into a ditch with snakes and scorpions in it," that's considered to be tantamount to testimony that he's dead. So what do these two sources, these two halachot show us? That a lion's den is less dangerous than a snake and scorpion den. Mm-hmm. Or to put it in the opposite terms, that snakes and scorpions dens are considered to be deadly.
Agap itzatsu maski.
So I'm thinking for a second, and I suppose that the way they're interpreting this is it's not a ditch full of snakes and scorpions, it's a ditch full of snakes or scorpions. No, it's either of the two. That's why this is an objection. Because we assumed earlier that scorpions are deadly and snakes might not be.
Yeah.
But this says if he fell into a pit or a ditch of snakes or scorpions, we consider him to be dead. So that proves that snakes are always deadly.
Yeah.
That's an objection to Rav Sheshet that said that snakes might not be deadly.
Mm-hmm. Can you translate the last few words of this?
Yeah. The ones I didn't read yet or the ones I did?
Oh, I don't know if you... I thought somebody read it.
I didn't read it yet.
Oh, okay.
How far did we do?
I just got up to the word Shemet, the beginning of a line.
Okay. That dead. That dead. Shemet.
Right. We testify, we have testimony that he's dead. If he fell into snakes or scorpions, then that's considered to be tantamount to testimony that he's dead.
So this we can say he's dead. Is that what
yeah,
it means?
Yes. So that means we have here a contradiction between Rav Sheshet that was assuming that Nachashim are not always dangerous, and that explains our Mishnah, mm-hmm. whereas this bright seems to say that snakes are dangerous, always dangerous. And the answer is, the conclusion is, Shiny Hatam, it's different over there. De agav itzatza mazki, which means de agav, that because, itzatza, they are disturbed, mazki, they're dangerous. They're dangerous.
Yeah, they're very dangerous. If he falls on top of them.
Agav, say that again.
That because, agav here means because.
Yeah. Rashi says because he falls on top of them.
They're disturbed.
Yeah.
Mazki. Mazki has a final nun missing. Mazkin. Mazikin.
They bite.
Yeah. In other words, if you have a snake on your ankle, you don't disturb him. It could be innocuous. But if you fall on snakes, they're going to bite you.
What's maybe
if the snake crawls on you, on the leg, it's not
object.
So dangerous. It may not bite you. But if you fall on top of the snake, then it's dangerous.
On the basis of a right.
I'm going to see what time is it. So time to end?
20 after 11.
An objection.
Made on the basis of a right.
So the conclusion therefore is, we can still maintain, we can continue to maintain as Rav Sheshet did, that the Mishnah is talking about a non-dangerous situation. It's only a snake. But had it been a scorpion, we would have stopped. And that fits with what we learned by Rav Yosef in the previous page. The Mishnah is only referring to non-poisonous kings. But had they been poisonous kings, we would have stopped. And all of this is what I said earlier. This seems to contradict the way the Tosfot Anshei Shemen sends the Mishnah, that it's really talking about poisonous kings and poisonous snakes, and that's only for Hasidim Rishonim, but not for us. So I guess that's a good place to stop. Anyone want to add question? Okay, fine.
Turn this off.